Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, hello everyone, and a very happy new year to everyone. We have been away for a while, but we're back now and plan to be here every 2 weeks from here on in, except for the next show. That will be 3 weeks from now, but Bobby will explain that. So this is our first show of the year 2010. And we will keep on keeping on until all 5 seasons of The Twilight Zone are covered and reviewed. We want all of you with us and hope many more will tune in. We have some updates and surprises in the upcoming shows. Some will be revealed now and some later. With that said, I'm going to turn this over to our fabulous head moderator, Mr. Bobby Neer. It's all yours, Bobby. Take it away.
Thank you, Lynn. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this latest edition of Talking Twilight Zone. My goodness, as Lynn has already said, we have not been here for some time, so long ago, in fact, that this is a different year. So although somewhat belated, let me just wish all of my co-hosts and everyone listening a very happy and healthy 2010. In tonight's show, we will pick up exactly where we left off in Season 1 with episodes number 19, The Purple Testament, and episode number 20, Elegy, both from season 1. Now, during our long hiatus, I don't want people to think we were just sitting around doing nothing. No, instead, we actively recruited a brand new co-host for this show, and he is here this evening to lend his opinions to ours. His name is Robert, and as anybody with a brain knows, you can never have too many Roberts or Bobs on a show. So the show automatically becomes twice as good as it used to be. So let's go back to Lynn so she can introduce our new host and do her summary and her opinion of our first episode tonight. Lynn, take it away.
Okay, and one thing I did forget to do, I forgot to put in our opening intro music, so I'm going to do that right now.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Okay, sorry I forgot to do that in the beginning, but it should have been done. Okay, our first episode that we're reviewing, I would first like to ask Robert, our newest co-host, who actually has a show of his own. It's called Doctor Who Reviewed Today, and the ID number for that is 22756. Am I correct, Robert?
Yes, correct. Thank you, Lynn.
All right, I would like to put that into the chat. 22756.
Let me just come in here a minute, Robert. We're delighted to have you here with us. We're glad you're here.
Well, thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it. And I am looking forward to adding whatever I can contribute to the show. So thank you again for that.
It will probably be very much as you always have. okay, I just put your ID number in there. So let me start with talking about Purple Testament. Okay, I'm sorry. I want you to do your clip.
Go ahead. Okay.
Rod Serling, the creator of Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this word from our alternate sponsor. Now, Mr. Serling.
Next week, we show you the face of war, but the kind of portrait we venture to say you've never seen before. Dick York and William Reynolds star in The Purple Testament. The story of a man who can forecast death. That's next week on The Twilight Zone, The Purple Testament. We hope you'll join us. Thank you.
There you are.
What a voice.
Can somebody tell me how to get Serling's voice? I sure would like to have it.
Oh, man, that voice is just... Oh, okay. All right, anyway, I'll try to calm down now. The Purple Testament, now, that was certainly a strange episode. I have to agree with Ken's comment on the discussion group that this episode dragged on at times. Don't you agree, Ken? It dragged on at times. And, it did. And I also agree with Bobby that the episode also had some intrigue to it. So it starts out with a man by the name of Lieutenant Fitzgerald, and he's the commanding officer of a platoon. And he tells a man who was his captain, named Captain Riker, that they just lost four men during a siege that they had been to that day. And the most daunting part of this is that Fitzgerald says he can tell who's going to die because he sees a light go across their faces, and he just knew they were going to die. Now, Riker, he's very skeptical of this. He wants Fitzgerald sent to a hospital for observation. So during Fitzgerald's time in the hospital, he's talking to a man by the name of Smitty, I think it is, and while he's talking to Smitty, he sees a light go across Smitty's face. Fitzgerald faints, and he awakes to find that Smitty has died. So I guess the most moving moment of this episode for me is when Fitzgerald leaves the hospital and Riker, his Captain Riker, takes pictures of his family out of his wallet and removes his wedding ring and puts them on the table. They go on the mission, and when they get back, Fitzgerald walks into Riker's tent and throws his dog tag on the table with the pictures and the ring. And the colonel comes in, and he tells him that Fitzgerald tells the colonel that they lost Riker. Later, Fitzgerald sees his own face in the mirror with the light across it, and he and his Jeep driver died while driving over minefields that they were warned about ahead of time. Now, Kitty asked an excellent question. She said, if you knew someone was going to die, would you do something to prevent it? Well, yeah, I would certainly try if it were in my power, but now the problem with the scenario is that they were at war. And because of that, Lieutenant Fitzgerald may have known who was going to die, but he most likely didn't know when the bullet or grenade was going to strike. That's the worst part about war. You never know when you're going to go. Every day, you know, soldiers are at war and they pray that they'll live to see the next day. But they also know, as soldiers, that any day could be their last. Now, I was not thrilled with this episode. The acting wasn't bad. We see Barney Phillips as Captain Gunther in one of his numerous appearances in Twilight Zone episodes, and this was one of the few times I was able to stomach Dick York. He was fine as Captain Riker, but I just never liked Dick York. I mean, ever since watching him when I was a kid and he was playing Elizabeth Montgomery's husband on Bewitched, he always annoyed me. He was such a dork. But he was a dork. But William Reynolds was fine as Lieutenant Fitzgerald. But one thing I really didn't understand, and this also relates to Kitty's question even more, at the end, he knew that he was going to die, along with the Jeep driver, in a mine explosion. What baffles me in this case is that he could have prevented his death and the driver's death simply by not going and making some excuse not to go. I'm sure he could have thought of something, yet he heard about the mines and let the driver head out with him anyway. This made no sense to me at all. He could have saved his own skin and the driver's skin in this instance, but he didn't. He just went along, and, you know, by the way, the driver, as many of you may know, was a very young and yet unknown Warren Oates, whom I loved in the movie Stripes with Bill Murray. So, overall, it was a rather strange ending and not a favorite episode of mine by any stretch. I have to give an average rating of 2 to this because, really, he knew right then and there he was going to die with his driver, and he did nothing to prevent it. So, okay, Kitty, what do you think, my dear?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said, and one of the things, though, that you left out in the summary was why Riker was putting his wedding ring in the and the pictures on the table, and it was because Fitzgerald told him that he had seen the light on his face, and he was just basically blowing the whole thing off, and he was saying, no, not going to listen to this. But interestingly enough, he does take out the pictures of his family and takes his wedding ring off before he leaves. And the way, when I first saw this episode, the way I actually thought that the episode would have gone at that point was that we would actually see them out in battle. And I actually thought that we would maybe see Fitzgerald take a bullet for Riker to prevent his death, because it was established that Riker had a family, and, you know, and Fitzgerald did not. And then you get to the end of the episode where Fitzgerald foresees his own death, and he does nothing. And I just kind of am at the end of it thinking, well, what was the point? Because, you know, what's the point in him having this ability to see something if he's not even going to do one thing to try to prevent it?
Exactly.
It just seemed kind of weird. And interestingly enough, you know, back in 2000, I think it was CBS tried to bring the show back. And basically what they did was that they rehashed a lot of old scripts. And they actually did, this was a script that they rehashed with a different scenario, with a teacher who was in her schools foreseeing the deaths of her students.
Really?
And then she realizes, you know, they were playing on the school shootings that have happened over the years, and she realizes when the fire alarm goes off that there's a shooter on the roof who's going to start shooting kids.
Oh,
and
wow.
she runs up to the roof, and she basically just runs right into him, and both of them go tumbling off the roof, and she sacrifices herself to save her students.
Now,
you know,
is this from the 1980s? The 1980s?
No. This was 2000. It was very short-lived. I think there's only like about 17 or 18 episodes that happened. Forrest Whitaker actually took on the role of Rod Serling. You would see him at the beginning of the episode.
I remember when he took that over, yeah.
Yeah, you would see Forrest Whitaker at the beginning of the episode giving the introduction to it. And it was, you know, and I actually thought that some of those shows were pretty good, but then, you know, but then as I saw more of the old Twilight Zone stuff, I realized they took a good chunk of their scripts and just rehashed them.
Some of the rehashments
were better. I mean, and in this case, I thought it was much better done. I mean, the Purple Testament, to me, like I said, at the end, I'm just thinking, well, what's the point? He had the ability to maybe do something about preventing someone's death, and in the end, he doesn't, and he doesn't even try to prevent his own death. You know, I mean, if you're not going to try to prevent your death, at least think about the poor Jeep driver. He didn't do anything to deserve getting blown up by a mine. So, I don't know. Ken, what do you think?
Okay, listening to Lynn and Kitty, I was just laughing in the background because it seemed like both of you were trying to stretch and say something about one of the most horrible scripts in the entire series.
I don't think it's quite that bad, but me either.
I'll try to be nice.
You just hate all the scripts, Ken.
I'll try to be nice with this one, okay? I'll be very, very nice, and I'll take every one of you back to, let's all go camping, and let's sit around the fire in the middle of the woods, and let's get a flashlight, put it up near our chin, and let's turn the flashlight on so our face will glow in the dark night, okay? And then everybody can take turns telling a scary story around the campfire with the glowing flashlight.
Ken, this is not Are You Afraid of the Dark we're talking about. It's the Twilight Zone.
Thank you.
So Rod Serling must have thought that if you can have somebody's face glow, then the audience is going to be in such awe that they're going to stick around to watch this flop of a script. I mean, for our group's sake, and for the sake of we're writing books on this series, I suffered and I stayed with the whole script. I tell you what, where is the beef? I mean, people are dying, but I don't see any explosions. I don't see any limbs flying in the air. This is war. What's going on? People are talking.
They're very conveniently showing us the battles. They're just showing us before and after.
Right.
It's a limited budget, Ken.
everybody's talking. I was praying for Samantha Stevens to show up. I wanted to see Elizabeth Montgomery. I wanted to see Agnes Moorehead.
Oh,
I wanted to see
Agnes
Moorehead.
Yeah, you'll see both of them later in different episodes.
Oh, my God. This is a war story. People are talking in the tent.
Agnes Moorehead. Jesus Christ.
I will give credit to one thing that did happen. At the end of the episode, I heard a sonic boom, but I didn't see anything. So that sonic boom indicated that the story was coming to a close, and good old Rod Serling came on, and he relieved me of all the sufferings I just went through for 30 minutes. Okay, I've got a treat here. My son came over to watch the football game, and I told him we were on the radio.
Yes, let's hear from
said
his
we were
son.
Watching.
Maybe he has something better to offer.
Well, he told me about, he said, yeah, I remember that episode from way back. So here is Paul Artizone, just for a couple minutes, okay?
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Welcome, Paul.
Just wanted to say real quick, I liked the episode, unlike my father, and thought that Rod Serling and the writers and everyone did a really good job of keeping you enthralled, even though there wasn't all the big explosions or anything, and that he still kept you in the storyline and focused with the characters. And towards the end, when you know he's going to go towards his own death, he still goes out in the battle and still goes out there, even though he knew he was going to die. And it makes you want to watch it multiple times, and it's just, I really like the episode. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, I can watch it.
Hey, you got good taste, Paul.
All right, I'm back. So, yeah, that's good to get different viewpoints, but look at it. I'm not in the third grade. I graduated from college, and when the Twilight Zone comes on, you writers and directors and actors, you give me something memorable. You give me something on the highest level. You guys are spending thousands and millions of dollars for your whole series. Don't just flop together a script and just have people talking in a tent and having a glowing face. Don't do this to me. I should have turned the channel and turned on Peyton Place instead of watching this.
Peyton Place would be better than
Peyton Place
Twilight
was
Zone?
I think that was a little bit later in the 60s.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw it over to our next guest. Is that you, Robert? You want to take a chance?
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of agree with some of the points that everybody had. I'll bring back Lynn's point as I go on about it being changing things around time-wise, you know, where they avoided it and something else, but I'll bring that thought up. Actually, I want to say this was a pretty interesting story. I do agree on the pacing of it, that it is a little bit stretched out. This probably could have been done in a 15-minute segment instead of a 22-minute segment. And they do try to add some of the war by the war footage that they did stick in to this episode.
That was in the beginning, wasn't it, Robert? That was in the beginning,
I think so,
right?
Yeah, where they were firing the guns and everything. That was stock footage that they stuck in there to give you the real feel for the episode itself. I mean, there was some nice touches, you know, by William Reynolds playing the, you know, the person that had the premonitions about, you know, who's going to die. And you know, he manages the gamut of all the emotions, you know, that, you know, you could see that he was going through. And then he does try to, and the film tried to make a change, but when he finds out that doesn't work, I mean, he gets depressed and you know, keeps to himself. I like how Dick York's character finally realized that, you know, it is a possibility that maybe what he's saying is true, and thereby he leaves his effects behind before he leaves, which was kind of a nice touch on that. But it reminds me of, now, you know, Ken brought up the thing about the campfire. This brought up the stories Grandpa used to tell you from the days when he was in the war. And you'd be sitting around and, well, I remember when I was back in Iwo Jima and we had this soldier that could, you know. and he would get into the war stories, and I know that there's some people there that probably ran into someone that's gone through a war too or a career or whatever, and they sit and tell you the stories. But, you know, it kind of reminded me of that, and also it kind of reminded me of an episode of MASH without the humor, unfortunately, with this one. But also we see Dick come back, I think, in the second season with A Penny for Your Thought. I think so. And
yeah.
Also, this does kind of remind me of a Fantasy Island story. Like, you know, you expect Mr. War come, and this is one of your, you know, dreams you decide. So, but I'm going to pass this on to Bolly. Bolly, did you have anybody that told you war stories when you were younger?
No, actually. I had a brother who went in the Army, but he went to Germany. He didn't go anywhere near the war. That was around the time of Korea. In my review of this episode, I took a little different tack on it, and I think the real problem with this story is that it's misplaced. It takes place in the wrong setting, and that's why it's not as terrifying as it ought to be. I mean, they're in a war, so it's already terrifying enough because you know a lot of people are going to die. In real life, everybody knows they're going to die one day, but you don't know when. And that's the big relief. We wouldn't want to know exactly when that is. And I speculated in my review, what would life be like if everybody knew exactly how much time they had? How frantic would everybody be to make money and to get a job and to have a family and to experience all the things life has if you knew time was running out? You don't have as much time as you think you do. In a war setting, nobody really knows how much time they have left. You go into a war, maybe you'll come out of it and maybe you won't. And in fact, there's probably more chance that you won't than that you will. So I would like this story better if it was in just everyday life where a person or persons all of a sudden had the ability to know who was going to die and who was not, from their relatives to their friends to whatever, because that disrupts everyday life. I think the Twilight Zone is always better when it takes everyday life and changes it in some way. So the problem here for me is that they're already in a war, and naturally it's very disturbing to know who's going to live and who's going to die. But to be honest with you, they're already in a terrible situation. It's already a life or death situation, and I don't know how much worse it can already get. So that's the part of it that really bothered me. I think it's misplaced, and it would have had more meaning, at least for me, in a different setting. Other than that, I agree. I believe I gave it a 2.5, which is probably generous. I wouldn't give it a 0 the way Ken did. I don't think it's totally worthless. But I would agree with Ken. There really isn't a whole lot going on here. And the funny part about it is when you have a war story, whether it's on TV or in the feature film, you do have explosions and death all over the screen in order to drive home the point. Ken's right. Here you've just got a bunch of people sitting around talking to each other, and it's really hard to tell that there's any real danger around. That, of course, this is the Twilight Zone. It's a half an hour series, and they have a limited budget, so you can't expect too much. Unlike some people in this group, I never had a problem with Dick York or anybody in it, so none of those things bothered me. But it's just, it's one of
York's
those...
York's a dork.
Well, that's your opinion.
No.
Yes, well, you know what? You know what? If Ken was married to a woman who was a witch, he might be a dork, too. So
well, how can
you
be married to a woman who's a witch and can take you anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, and just by twitching her nose, and she can take you anywhere. She can get the whole house clean. All she has to do is twitch her nose. The dishes are done. The house is clean. She can give you a fabulous car, everything. And he doesn't want that. No, I want you to be like a mortal woman. You know, what an asshole.
Can we get back to the subject at hand and
yeah,
do Bewitched some other day? I'm sure there's a group doing Bewitched. We'll let them do that. At any rate, like I said, I don't think it's that bad, but it's not one of the most exciting episodes of the series. And I like the Twilight Zone. I like the Twilight Zone when it takes people in everyday normal situations, and then all of a sudden something changes. Something happens to take them out of their normal situation. In this story, you've already got people in a deadly situation. People are going to die. All you're doing is ramping it up because now not only are people going to die, now we know who's going to die. And beyond that, what is the resolution of it anyway? There's a war to be won. What are you going to do? Not send those people out there who have this light passing across their face that they're going to die in the battle? If that's true, we're going to lose the war because we have to have all the men possible. We can't afford to have only the people out there who fake deems will be able to come home.
Yeah, but so, he could have prevented his death and his driver's death at the end of that show.
That's why I wanted to bring up with you on that, Lynn, because, yeah, that's possible. But what if you cause somebody else's death by changing your own? Could you hold that responsibility?
What do you mean? Like he was warned about the minefields ahead of time, and he saw the light across his driver's face, Warren Oates' face, and he knew that he and Warren Oates were going to die. So he could have prevented his driver's death and his if he just had not gone. So what do you mean? Like if he hadn't gone, someone else would have gone in their place?
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah. But you're
okay,
right.
The person that went in their place would have died anyway? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, what if that person wasn't meant to die, and then you change places with that other person?
But
you were supposed to be the one that was supposed to go.
You either believe in fate or you don't. So you're telling me you can change fate.
Hey, guys. I have a suggestion. We can change the title of the episode to Twinkle, Twinkle, Glowing Face.
Gee, you're really on today, Ken. It's fascinating.
Oh, Ken is at his best today, yeah.
But that's why we got our detective shows out now. Tell me a show that does not have a psychic detective in it today.
If you really want to see a war story, Rent Saving Private Ryan.
That's great. A good one. I have that on DVD. That's awesome. That's awesome. Saving Private Ryan.
Would you have liked to have seen this story about the glowing faces on MASH instead? You think they could have done it better?
I like MASH. It had some comedy.
MASH was awesome.
But the Twilight Zone is not comedy. It's science fiction.
Yeah, but
MASH actually wasn't
stories.
Comedy either.
They didn't always do comedy.
MASH was what you would call a dramedy. It had a lot of drama in it, but it also had comedy.
Well, Twilight Zone was a mixture. It also had some drama in it as well.
All right, everybody. I think we've pretty much run this into the ground. So let's move on to our next episode. But before that, I have a few things to say. Normally this show runs every 2 weeks, but between this show and our next one will be 3 weeks, an extra week. So we'll be back on Saturday, February the 6th, which just happens to be the first day of Super Bowl weekend. For a true Twilight Zone classic, Season 1, Episode number 21, Mirror Image. The original air date was February 26, 1960. While waiting in a bus station, Millicent Barnes has a strange feeling that her exact double, who she spots sitting on a bench, is trying to take over her life. Vera Miles and Martin Milner co-star in Mirror Image 3 weeks from today on Talking Twilight Zone.
Ken's favorite episode.
Yes, I know. Normally we are on the air every 2 weeks, and we will go back to that schedule after this next program. But one of us, namely me, has something important to do in 2 weeks, so we're skipping one extra week. Be here on February 6th, the first day of Super Bowl weekend. Also, I'd like to mention that our co-host Ken now has his own talk show program called Ken's Life Gardening, and his next show is next week, Saturday, January the 23rd. Ken, can you tell us a little about this upcoming show?
Yes, our first show was on money stories, and it was very highly rated across the country. So the second episode is going to be called People Stories, and I have some stories that nobody in the history of mankind has ever heard of. And I have some very intriguing question to ask at the beginning of our show. And then everybody can be hanging on to their seat because I will give the answer at the end of the show. So you need to tune in.
I bet I know what the question is already. How many times has Ken been laid while he's been doing his job?
I have the honor of being his co-host on the show, so I can't wait for this.
All right, that's next week.
I even have his music ready. Everything is going to be. I can't wait.
All right, that's next week on the 23rd at the same time that we're on now. All right, let's turn it back over to Lynn for her summary and review of our next episode, Elegy. Lynn?
Oh, man. Okay. What can I really say about this episode other than I don't know what to make of it?
You may want to clip while you think of it?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Do that.
And now, Mr. Serling.
The time is the day after tomorrow. The place, a far corner of the universe. The cast of characters, three men lost amongst the stars. Three men sharing the common urgency of all men lost. They're looking for home. And in a moment, they'll find home. Not a home that is a place to be seen, but a strange, unexplainable experience to be felt.
Back to you, Lynn.
Thank you, Robert.
Lynn, can I interject something here for a second?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to know from Robert if he can create something new in which instead of Lynn introducing me on our shows as Bobby Neer, she introduces me as Mr. Nierenberg. I like that a lot better.
Yeah, okay. All right, anyway. all right, yeah, okay. Well, you know, there were three astronauts who wanted nothing more than to be back on their ship heading towards home. They had no clue where they were, and they were stuck in an empty world with non-moving people and animals and nothing other than their own existence, which was interesting because how did this come to be? Finally, they stumble upon this man, Mr. Wickwire, who runs this non-existent world they are in. Now, is he going to send them home? No. He's not going to send them home. He's going to make them a part of his non-living museum. As these astronauts search and search for some sort of life form before coming across Mr. Wickwire, who, by the way, was played wonderfully by Cecil Kellaway and was the one person in this episode who could actually act, they kept coming across lifeless bodies, and they still don't get it. How many lifeless bodies do you need to knock over before you realize there is no living, breathing life there? I don't get it. You know, I mean, how many? You're going to keep knocking people over? Knocking wooden people over? They're dead. They're all gone. You know, they're knocking these people over, and they're like, oh, well, somebody's got to be alive. Yeah. Okay, well, Mr. Wickwire's alive, so they found him. Well, I will say it was an interesting and somewhat intriguing episode, but it didn't really do a whole lot for me. Sure, I'd watch it again, but it just didn't do much for me. I have to add here that Bob made a great observation in his review at the discussion group by saying the poor old man has to get up and dust these people every day. Well, yeah, he does. He has to get up and dust these people every day. Glad all I have to dust is, you know, a few knickknacks and my furniture, huh? You know, that's it. But I'll give it a 3 rating of good only because of Cecil Kellaway. Because if not for him, this episode would be totally worthless. So, Kitty, please, help me out here.
Well, I actually gave it the same rating, a 3. And what it was, it's not just a lifeless world. Mr. Wickwire actually explains to them that it's a cemetery, and that basically, I mean, it's probably truly the strangest cemetery that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But everybody who gets to go to this cemetery, they get to be, I guess you could say, mummified into what it is they always wanted to be. Yeah, and from that standpoint, I found it to be kind of interesting because some of the things that they come across. I mean, like they come across one guy comes across a beauty pageant, and you see this woman who wins. She's kind of homely looking, and behind her are like the runners up, and they're all really pretty. You know, that's kind of intriguing. Another guy comes across somebody who's just been elected the mayor of his town. And then also just some simple things. I mean, like they come across one guy who's just mowing his grass. And obviously his favorite dog is with him as well. So that's kind of interesting in that take of it. And then the real little bit of irony, though, I guess, in the end, is that Mr. Wickwire actually kills them, as you recall. I mean, he gives mm-hmm. them something to drink, and they realize they're dying. And basically, the guy said that he, you know, because they actually also get into a discussion about Earth's history and about how they talked about how there was a nuclear war that happened. And this guy basically decides he doesn't like them because they're from Earth. And he's just kind of the alien who's elected himself judge, jury, and executioner of them. Because the guy said, well, we meant you no harm. And he said, well, but, you know, you can't go back there because basically he's saying Earth people are just bad news in general. So that was a little interesting. It wasn't an episode that necessarily knocked my socks off or anything. I wasn't at the end of it going, wow, this is a pretty amazing episode. But, you know, I didn't sit there and go, oh, this is a really dumb episode. I just thought it was all right. I gave it a 3. So I'm sure Ken hates it, though.
Oh, I know he does.
So tell us why you hate it, Ken.
Well, I don't hate every single Twilight Zone episode. All I'm asking for is good script writing and to give me something I haven't seen before. I can honestly say
I had never seen an episode quite like this before.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Frozen people, frozen beauty pageant. I guess you had some people up on the stage and they're all frozen. What I was most interested in watching the episode is you've got the actors and actresses and the people, you know, the extras. I kept watching to see if they would move, you know, because the director says, "All right, everybody, hold still. You're supposed to be motionless." So I'm looking to see if anybody's budging. If anybody blinks their eye.
They did.
And they did a pretty good job. I didn't see too many glaring. I think a couple times the editor must have frozen the still, right, on the camera. And so that's how they tricked us on what some of those parts. But you know what? As far as the story, if I was talking to Rod Serling today and just before he produced this one, I would say, hey, Rod, we've had it with the space suits, the flying saucers,
the asteroid,
655 million miles away from Earth. Rod, can't you get into some other subjects? You know, there's so much in society that you could do stories on, you know, culture, music. You could do the theater, you could do religion, you can do all these things. But, Rod, this is the sixth time you've gotten into the area of space. But anyway, you watch the episode, these three clowns are walking around. I would have also said, hey, Rod, instead of three men, why not have three women spacemen and have women in the role and have them walking around?
Hey, Bob, does that surprise you?
Also,
want Susan Oliver, Vera Miles, and Ida Lupino walking around.
Doesn't surprise
me. No, not
Ida.
I would have Elizabeth McGunry,
Janice Rule. And Agnes Moorhead. Don't forget Agnes Moorhead, because Ken's in love with Agnes Moorhead.
You know what? Why not Agnes Moorhead? But you know what also I would have done with the story? Here's what I would have done with the story. Okay, people are motionless. People are frozen. Okay, these spacemen get onto the asteroid or wherever they are, and they're walking around. Hey, they see a bank, and, you know, people in the bank are frozen. So walking in the bank, and then one of the guys says, hey, there's some money. They're not moving. They're not doing anything. Let's take some money. Then they
go to the next... So what are they going to do with it?
I I don't know. Just
there's nobody
you know,
alive. There's nobody to buy anything
but,
from.
But if there's thousands of dollars in the cash register, just put it in your pocket just for just to do it. And then
30? Yeah.
Go over to the jewelry store. I would have had a scene where the jewelry store and they everyone's motionless again, right? Hey, let's steal a Rolex watch or something and put it on, you know. And I would have done that, and then...
Well, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. What's the purpose of money if nobody is alive and nobody is living? What is the purpose of having money? You can't buy anything. You can just go in and steal it.
Well, but you know humankind and human nature. If you see money on the table, are you just going to walk by?
Sure,
no, you're gonna
nobody's
take...
going to be able to sell me anything. I'll just go in the store and steal everything I want.
But here's how I would have ended the whole episode. You ready for a climactic ending?
Yes.
All the frozen people come to life, and they turn into zombies, and they start eating everybody, and everybody's running.
And they beat the shit out of each other. All right, okay.
Yeah, and they're running, just like the end of, you remember the end of Monsters on Maple Street?
Oh, yeah,
and all those people were
all
running around, and they were, same thing here. But anyway,
no.
Robert, I'm going to throw it over to you.
Come on, Robert. Save us from this.
Actually, isn't there a future story down the road that Sterling does that? You two are kind of the same mind, aren't you, Ken?
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, you guys are going to laugh at me for thinking about this. When I was watching this show and saw the scene where, and we know that, you know, the astronauts are trapped, as usual, they can't leave, they can't go nowhere, either out of fuel, a ship is destroyed or something or another. So, you know, they're walking around, and you know, they see the farm in the beginning, right? And then they meet Wickwire later on, and he's sitting in a rocking chair. You know what it reminded me of? Now, I was waiting for a broken-up scene from Uncle Joe coming out on that rocking chair. Why are you boys doing on my planet?
Petticoat Junction.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but that's what I thought when I was watching that. It's like, oh, my.
Petticoat Junction, yeah.
And, you know, actually, I thought they were suspended animated, but until we find out the real reason. You must be pretty dumb to... You're landing on an alien asteroid, you might as well say what it is, and, you know, you offer to drink. You actually going to believe this person? And food-wise, what, guy has three freeze-dried food for in case visitors happen to stop by, you know, 100 years down the road or something like that? It's, I don't know. And then it reminded me of Psycho, and... you know, Wickwire is kind of the Norman Bates type thing, except for he's not stuffing them. He's actually poisoning them, you know, like Norman did in the kitchen with the poison.
With the birds.
Yeah, with the birds
and all,
stuff. Yeah, and then it reminded me of an episode of future Star Trek Voyager in the episode Caretaker, where a guy brings them into this kind of setting, as you've seen on the Twilight Zone. So, I mean, it brings back a lot of things that, you know, we see future on. And I don't know. I just was bored with this episode. I liked the Purple Testament a little bit better than I liked this episode. And how'd you feel about this, Bobby? You kind of feel the same way?
I only wish it had been like Psycho. It would have been more interesting. to be honest with you, I think it's terribly, terribly boring. And it just, I have no idea what my rating was because I don't have it in front of me. I can't see it at the moment, so I probably overrated it. Nothing happens here.
You gave it an average.
Well, that was kind of me because I don't know that it deserves that. There's really nothing going on. It's not a terribly fascinating story to just try sit there and watch these three guys try to figure out what's going on, because I didn't really care what was going on. I didn't much care about the only thing interesting to me. Was doing what Ken did, was trying to see whether all those extras they paid to stand there and do nothing actually would be able to stand still for that amount of time that it took to film the episode.
They didn't.
Why? You really see people move? I didn't see that.
Yes, I saw an arm move, and I saw someone blink.
Really?
I saw someone blink, and I saw an arm move.
Oh, well, I'll have to watch it again just to see that.
Watch it again. You will see a person blink, and you will see an arm move.
Well, I'll tell you what my big problem is. I really believe that Rod Serling and the people behind the Twilight Zone would have been better off to stay away from too much science fiction. When I was a kid watching this as an original series, I was not a big science fiction fan like some kids are. And I never considered the Twilight Zone to be science fiction. I didn't watch it for spacemen and outer space exploration, landing on other planets, stuff like that. I would even at that age, I would rather see just people in everyday situations, like I mentioned earlier, than to see this kind of thing. Because going into outer space brings with it a certain amount of danger anyway. So it's not a surprise that you might land on an asteroid and see something unusual like this. You have to expect that things are not going to be the same. So I think that they should have stayed away from that. Too much science fiction, too much space exploration. I just don't like that kind of stuff. And every time they do a story, every time they do a story like that, it really is a failure. It really isn't as good as it ought to be. And I'm not going to say they're all like that. Some of them are a little better than others, but I would say stay away from that kind of thing. Now about Cecil Kellaway, I mean, never in the history of film has one man been so typecast. I don't know if any movie he was ever in which he didn't play that part. If anybody knows it, please tell me what it was. I mean, he must have been born that age. He was always a little old man.
He was always the little old grandfather. That everybody believed was their grandfather.
I don't doubt that he made a very nice living doing that. I'm sure he did. And certainly everybody knew who he was. But enough is enough. I don't want to see him in every single story he's in. Whether it's the Twilight Zone,
he's only been in one Twilight Zone episode.
But I'm talking about all the other series he was in,
yeah.
And all the other movies he was in for years and years and years. Always the same thing. You walk in the door and you can even name him right away. And you're like, oh, here's Cecil Kellaway. What do you know? He's playing the same part he's always played. So I think that was rather. I was thinking, yeah, he may be adorable, but he's kind of tedious after a while. So I just don't.
So are you?
Thank you very much. I don't think this story really has any great fear in it. I don't. I just watched it. I agree with Ken. There are certain episodes that don't grab you. I mean, they just you watch it. Even back in the early '60s, this is probably still the best thing on TV. But you know, in a series like this, you expect something more out of it. I like Ken's line that he uses from time to time. Where's the beef? I mean, there's no beef in this episode. They land on this episode, they walk around, and they keep talking about what does this mean, why is everybody still, why aren't they moving, and if you're smart enough watching at home, you'll probably figure out the ending before they do, and then that's the end of it. I think it would have been more interesting, actually, to watch Cecil Kellaway get up every morning and dust everybody off. That would have been more interesting than this is.
But what does this remind you of, Bobby, this episode? Being in a museum, walking around, and the caretaker there dusting people off. Doesn't it feel like you were in a human museum here where you're just walking around and doing the sights and everything, and, you know, this is what way it was back in this century of time?
Well, it does remind you of a museum. You know what was more interesting than this? Because it was at least funny. That movie with Ben Stiller, what's that movie
yep.
called?
Night
at the Museum. Night
at the Museum, yeah.
And Night at the Museum. They should have renamed it that because that's really all it is. It's just, I thought, you know, the idea of dusting everything is more compelling to me than just watching this. It's just, there's just nothing going on there. So,
but that was the action.
Back-to-back episodes like this, it's really amazing. I'm always fascinated by the fact that the Twilight Zone has this, everybody remembers it so fondly. When you mention the series, people pick out the classic episodes. Oh, yeah, I remember this one, and I remember that one. And that's why I started this group, because I wanted to show that it wasn't always great. You had back-to-back, sometimes back-to-back-to-back episodes that were really not very interesting. They made up for it. Like, next week we've got Mirror Image. We've got Monsters Are Doing Maple Street after that. So, you know, you go a couple of weeks with these two losing episodes, and then all of a sudden you got two classic episodes. You go, wow, you know?
Awesome classics, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it almost seems as though the series is getting better, but the fact is later on it's going to go, you know, it's going to go back into the pits again, And that's the way TV series are.
Well, thank God the worst episode of the entire Twilight Zone series doesn't come until this.
No,
I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just saying the worst episode of all time that I've ever seen is in the fifth season. So I don't have to worry about that now.
Yeah. I think the problem they ran into is the idea and the concept. Maybe it was a great idea. Basically, it was just a repeat of the first episode of the first season.
That's true.
If you think about it, pretty much. Where is everybody?
Yeah. See, there's a certain, you know, guys, there's a certain formula that works. And you when you're watching an episode, you know it's going to be a good story. But other times, the formula is just not there, and you can see it in the beginning. I mean, when I saw the spacesuits and the spacemen walking around, I mean, what else can you really do with the story? Really, not much. Not much. And so you see, as it develops, you know, Rod Serling's kind of stretching here a little bit. You know, motionless people, big deal. Then Wickwire, you know, remember right when the 15-minute break comes? They show the part where Wickwire is the only one not motionless, and everybody is kind of shocked. So it's not much there. And then the second half is just horrible, really. And then the ending, they drink it, and then now they're motionless, and then he dusts them off. So, I mean, I just watched 30 minutes. What did I really get out of the story? Not much, really. And that's my whole beef with the Twilight Zone, you know. Other times, you get something out of the story. It really works.
What was your rating on this?
Yeah, wow. You know what? You know why I gave it a good? Because
you didn't give it a good.
I gave it a good because
you gave it a three.
Excuse me. You want me to go back in and look at it?
We've already looked at it. No. Ken gave it a three. I saw it.
Yeah, you know why I gave it a three?
No.
Because I just got through watching The Glowing Faces, so I just had mercy on the next episode. It always happens. If one is lousy, then the next episode, I'm going to be nice and give it
a better
rating.
You really feel that this is better than that last one?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Which one did you give a lousy to?
Purple Testament, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
Purple
right.
Testament.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, the
I'm
glowing,
sorry, Ken.
The Glowing Faces... The Glowing Faces was just horrible. You have to admit it.
Yeah, all right.
I give this one below average.
You gave a lousy two.
Unfortunately.
Well, had anything happened in it, it would have been a more interesting episode. Anytime you get an episode where nothing happens and people just stand around.
Bob, another reason why I gave a good rating is because they had some beauties on the stage there, the beauty pageant. So you've got to give a better rating.
That surprises me.
I want everybody to know Ken's a married man. Ken, how many years have you been married?
33.
Yeah, get over it already.
Now we know why he's always looking at the women, right?
Can he possibly get over it at some point? All right, look, we're just about...
Wait a minute, let me ask Robert a question. Robert, are you going to join our group at some point?
I'll try to eventually. I'm not very good with writing. I'm more into the talking and stuff, so.
You don't have to be good at writing.
I know.
I mean, we've got people in there that can't spell for worth of crap. Uh-huh. I mean, I have one of my very best girlfriends is one of the members, and she can't spell to save her life, and she makes over $100,000 a year. And this woman can't type. This woman can't type to save her life.
We'll see, Lynn. I don't write letters to nobody anyway.
Yeah, don't put too much pressure. Robert, we're pleased to have you here. You do
whatever you like.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Join the group. We want to have you there. Want your opinions.
I appreciate that, Lynn. Thank you.
Lynn, let me wrap this up, okay?
All right.
That pretty much does it for today. I want to thank everybody for being here and everybody who listens to the show. And remind them that we'll be back 3 weeks from today with a classic Twilight Zone episode. Please tune in next week for Ken's show. It's X-rated, believe me. I know. I've seen the outline. So I was blushing even while I was reading it. So you don't want to miss that. Also, this coming Monday on the 18th at the Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, we will do our next episode, which is The Chaser from Season 1. So So thanks to everybody. We had a good show here. And Lynn, why don't you close us out?
All right, here we go. And Happy New Year to everyone. Talking about pizza all of a sudden.
He's talking to his kid.
Oh, Ken, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I'm missing the football.